This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm going in to see my main client tomorrow. We'll see. I think we'll be okay. We're finishing up on the end of the month, but everything seems to be puttering along. It's just puttering along. And we moved the web store, and that all seems to be fine. And then another website got moved that I wasn't directly connected to, but I would have gotten involved if it had gone wrong. But it seems to be fine. Everything is fine. We're moving forward. Fine. Still making plans for May the 4th, Star Wars Day. It's not going to be like a leprechaun costume or an elf costume or anything like that. There's just maybe like rabid fan costume or something. I don't know, but it'll be fun. It'll be fun. I've found some cute things. It'll be fun. It'll be fine. Yeah. So I got that done. Some of that got that done this week. I like to plan ahead. So that the one last piece that I've been waiting to come in, I think, comes in today. So I'm about still a week out, but, you know, if I need to add anything else to it, I'll just keep adding. So that's fun. As I said, all is well at work. As far as the writing goes, everything is puttering along. I'm a few words down this week, but not too bad. I think 300 or so. I had dinner with a friend on Tuesday, so that threw me a little later. And then I had a few things I had to take care of when I got home. And so then I didn't quite have as much time as I normally do. But you know what? It will be fine. What I'm working on right now, it hasn't settled yet. It just hasn't touched down. It's the right thing, but it's not. You know, I've got to reread it tonight and see where we're at. And I may have to rewrite some of that. So, I'm just leaving Maranatha Village right now, where my dad lives. Says I visited him tonight. I try to get over here and see him at least once a day, 6 days a week. And then my daughter takes care of the seventh day, which is on Wednesday. She brings the great-grandchildren over, and she sits and talks with Dad, so that's nice. But last night, I got a call from Dad about 7:15, because he's in the house by himself. You know, he's in the house by himself. He gets a visit from me. He gets a few visits from the hospice people. But that's about it. So he called me about 7:15, and he had told me, he said, "Phil," he said, "my TV's not working. What am I going to do without my TV?" I said, "Well, Pop, I don't know. I mean, Maranatha's closed at this point. I don't know who I'd call, Pop." I said, "How long has it been off?" "Oh, 15 minutes. Okay, well, all right. I will call them in the morning." So he called me about 7 o'clock this morning. 7:15, I don't know. "Is there anything you can do?" I said, "Pop, I don't know, Pop." I said, "I'll call them." I tried to call, could not even get into the switchboard at Maranatha. Turns out, I'm not exactly sure what happened, but when I just left Maranatha right now, there were normally two ground-mounted transformers, fairly big ground-mounted transformers that are out there right at the street. And where there was supposed to be two, there was just plywood around where the other one. So I don't know if somebody came through there and just cleaned out that transformer or what happened, but I was talking to a buddy who works security, Maranatha, in the evenings, and he was saying that like half of Maranatha had lost power. And so in the process of them losing power, then of course their switchboard goes down, then of course the broadcast distribution system goes down for all their cable, and everything's out. I guess they finally got it back up about 1 o'clock today. So when I got to see Dad, the power was back on. He never lost power, but his TV was back on. So, you know, I told him, no matter how bad you think it is, Pop, he started nodding his head. He knows where I'm going. There's always somebody who has it worse. So, I mean, he didn't have any TV, but there was a bunch of people who didn't have power last night. So, okay, someone has just gone all the way to a stop. I think their car has died. Oh, there we go. Now they're going. But anyways, so all is well. We are puttering along. I still have not received my sequined jacket, my Uncle Sam outfit. I'm a little discouraged because I don't think I'm going to get it. And I don't even know if I can find another one. I've looked around. There is an Uncle Sam outfit jacket where the jacket is not sequin covered, and it's a whole lot cheaper. And I could probably get one of those in, you know, when you had a chance to get a sequin jacket. It's like, man. So I finally had to start getting a little more pointed. We'll call it pointed. A little more pointed in my emails to the company who supposedly had shipped the item to me weeks ago. And I think I'm just going to have to get to the place where I'm going to have to request a refund and then go hunt around. I did write to two other companies who were advertising the same thing, saying they had it in stock. And I wrote them and I said, okay, I know what your website says. I've read your signs that you have on there and your alerts that you do have it in stock. Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Hold on. Scrape, scrape, bonk, bonk. Sorry. Pushed on the brake a little too hard there. Just slung. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Okay, let me get this arranged here. Yeah, okay, here we go. Okay, sorry about that. If you were listening on headphones, sorry. Sorry. Probably thinking, what in the world? Right. I did write to a couple of other companies that had the sequined Uncle Sam outfit. And one of them wrote back and they said, well, if it's showing that we have it in stock, no, we don't have it in stock. Because I wrote them. I said, do you really have this in stock or are you just going to drop ship this from China? And they said, and if there's no availability date on there, it probably means, so I think maybe the company in China that manufactured these, I think maybe they've stopped making this thing and we're just at the tail end of it. So that's kind of sad, but what are you going to do? Got to move on. It was a fun adventure. Oh, well, but I'll get that worked out. Anyways, a couple of weeks ago, actually, I think 3 weeks ago now, I had found this article. I wasn't new 3 weeks ago, but it was one of those things. I think it was written shortly after the Super Bowl. And the title of the article was, Why Do Fans Riot After a Win? Subtitled, The Science Behind Philadelphia's Super Bowl Chaos. Now, there's a couple of things that amuses me about these type of articles. One, it amuses me to see how people try to explain away the flesh. That's the first thing that amuses me. The second thing that amuses me is that they use a subtitle where they invoke the all-powerful, all-authoritative, all-answering word, science. Because the science behind Philadelphia's Super Bowl chaos. Except, if you get all the way to the end of it, really all that's there is just a bunch of conjecture and anecdotal evidence. And then at the very end, you'll see that the last people who have supposedly studied this say, well, it's this and this and this. Or it might just be this. This doesn't sound like a scientific conclusion to me. This sounds like guessing. So as long as we're guessing, I think my guesses are just as good as anyone else. Anyway, so they were describing what had happened, apparently, after the Philadelphia Super Bowl win. Fires in the streets, smashed windows, flipped cars, light poles toppled by alcohol-fueled crowds. Well, there's a problem right there. Philadelphia woke up this morning after the triumph of the Super Bowl Sunday to a city in disarray. And this vexing question, what is it about sports that makes fans riot? Well, this is pretty easy, but that's okay. Let's see what they say. So, of course, the psychologists and sociologists have studied the phenomenon, you know, try to figure out. They attribute the violent behavior to a heady mix of factors. Intense fan identification, behavioral changes when people become part of a mob, strong psychological and physiological responses when your team wins or loses. So, they were saying that sports fan violence happens all over the world, but it is different in the States. They said with soccer, a lot of it's hooliganism. So when their team loses, then they riot and they do all this kind of stuff. I said, what's interesting is that in the United States, it's usually limited to vandalism and violence directed at inanimate objects. And, wait, maybe I had read that wrong. Yes. So hooliganism is mostly fans beating each other up. But in the States, it's usually limited to inanimate objects. So, at least there's that. And, in the States, fans typically riot after championships or high-stakes playoff games. Okay, so... And, when American sports fans riot, it's almost always in celebration of a victory. Which is a little different and interesting. Anyways, so... You know, then they started going through the science part of it. And not that I believe any of these things are wrong. Of course, you can see all this stuff. They say, well, we're social creatures. We have a need to belong. Well, yeah, of course. You know, and so they said, you know, you just think about how we are when we interact with each other about games. You know, for guys especially, we hug and touch each other in ways we often never do otherwise. We want to be part of something that transcends ourselves. I think one of the funniest things that I ever heard about sports, said about sports, is that sports is the only emotional life that most men have. Which is sadly true. Sadly true. Men who have been taught that they just have to suppress, they can't smile, they can't laugh, they can't cry, they just gotta be the strong man that's gonna go out there and guard the gates and beat people up who are any danger, blah, blah. That's no way to live. None, zippo, no way to live. But then in sports, we've got this idea, you know, that it's manly. Somehow, it's manly to sit in front of a box watching someone else accomplish something and then identify with them and go, yeah, that's my team. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't get that. But that's fine. That's fine. If that gives men a little outlet for their emotions, great. I would rather see them have an outlet that's a little more real than that, where they're caring for people and, you know, they're engaging with people. But never mind. For many men, sports is the only emotional life they have. Okay, so anyway, so they said, okay, so you've got this. They have intense loyalty to their teams. Well, you know, but what happens in a fan's brain? You know, so they were trying to measure all that to try to figure out why people riot. And what they found is, not surprisingly, when your team wins, you feel better about yourself. Wow, that's some profound science there. So, you know, and it manifests itself in physical ways. So, when their team wins, men actually do better at things, you know, solving anagrams, shooting darts. Why? Because they have more confidence, because they feel better about themselves, etc., etc. When their team loses, then they feel more pessimistic about themselves. Okay. Okay, there's an explanation for all that stuff too, but we'll just go with it. They said, and actually testosterone levels increase or decrease, depending on whether your team wins or loses. And they said a 2013 study found that fans of losing teams experience an urge to eat more saturated fats and sugars the day after, while fans of winning teams choose more healthy foods. Okay, there's a reason for that as well. So where does the urge of violence come from? Okay, so then they started talking about the mob mentality. You know, one of the reasons I don't abhor crowds, but when there's a lot of people around me, that's not the most comfortable situation for me. Because I can just feel the IQ of everybody in that crowd descending. You know, when I'm in a big crowd of people, it's just like I can feel everybody getting stupid. And there's a reason for that as well, because there's a certain anonymity in a crowd. And they, part of their science, study celebratory fan violence more than a decade. People make poor decisions in crowds because they think they're anonymous. Well, yeah, that's not too hard to figure out. So, and then another profound statement. But there's also the alcohol, which adds fuel to the action. Well, yeah, because alcohol suppresses your executive function in your brain. So that thing that's telling you that things are a good idea or not, I'm checking my mail one moment. You tank up on alcohol, that doesn't work as well. Okay, so yeah. So is this the last piece I was waiting for? I think it is. Okay, good. Anyways, so yeah, I've got tickled reading this article because this is all the science part of it. So let's see, when people act in group, neuroscientists have also found their medial prefrontal cortex, which is the part responsible for self-reflection, is more dormant. So in other words, they're just kind of going with it. They're just giving themselves permission to just go with it. So anyway, so the article goes on like that for a while. They have this thing called the contagion theory, where people pick up stuff from other people. And they said it is possible. It's possible that being in groups can also bring out the best in us.
Yeah.
Not random mobs normally, but encouraging us to donate or do collective acts of kindness. Okay. He also noted that they also note, according to the science, that the rioters are almost always young white males with few women or older fans involved. Right. Because young men are hopped up on testosterone. And, you know, there's that factor. They can't throw a football or 60 yards like a quarterback can, but they can throw a rock through a window or pull down a light pole. To them, it becomes a feat of strength and skill. Okay, well, why would people equate vandalism and pulling down a light pole to the same skill as training for years to be able to throw, you know, something? Something's not going on here. Others say that the very nature of sports contributes to the tendency for violence. Viewing a sporting event serves to build up and relieve the destructive energy. Destructive energy. That's an interesting title for it. Argue the authors of a 2002 academic book on the subject, Violence and Aggression in Sporting Contests. This is their big conclusion out of this book, apparently. For a certain subset of sports fans, witnessing violent sports is not enough to reduce such energy to tolerable levels. And only personally experienced aggressive acts serve to relieve the tension built up before, during, and after an exciting sports event. So they're saying, well, you know, for some men, where they're just watching this sporting event and they all get their blood up And it's not enough to just see that the event is over, you know. Then they got to have some way to get their blood back down. They got to go out and work some things out so they'll be okay. So that's apparently the scientific explanation for what's going on. And then the authors, it says, added this caveat. Or maybe some sports fans just enjoy hurting people and breaking stuff. Yeah, I'm going to go with the last one there. Why do some sports fans enjoy hurting people and breaking stuff? Because sports fans, just like every other human being on the planet, have a flesh. So, let's try this again. So why do sports fans riot after a win? Because the flesh knows that there's certain people that it can get to do stupid things when they get in that heightened state of euphoria, especially if they've drunk a lot of alcohol. Then the flesh is just waiting to capitalize on that. Why do people feel better about themselves and feel more optimistic afterwards? Because seeing their team win actually improves their mood, and when the flesh tries to make them feel bad about themselves, they can kind of like ride that little wave for a while. They get a little euphoria out of that. And why do they eat a bunch of junk food the day after when their team loses? Because their flesh is just turning the screws. It knows it's got them a little bit down, and then once it has them on the ropes, man, it's just like, you should just eat a bunch of stuff. You're terrible. You're a loser. You know, so, you know, I look across all of this stuff, and I say, you know, this is not really that hard. The flesh will take whatever behavior you're willing to allow it to spur you on to do. And it's looking for opportunities every moment to convince you, to lie to you, to tell you, you should just go out and do this. You get in a crowd, why does the collective intelligence level go down? Because in a crowd, there is that feeling of anonymity. And inside everybody who has a flesh, that flesh starts up, you know. No one will ever know if you do stuff, you know. And if you do stuff right now, that you're going to be fine. You know, no one's going to know it. You should just do it. You should ride. You should pull something down, you know, because it's just looking to cause as much destruction as it can in any given moment. And anytime you get into a situation where you allow your executive function, you allow yourself to check out from your rationality. You consume enough alcohol that you're no longer in control of your thought process. Anytime you do that, you can bet the flesh is going to find a way to capitalize on that and make you do something stupid. Because that's what it's always going for. Destruction. Jesus said there are two gates and there are two paths before us. Life and destruction. Broad gate, narrow gate. Broad path, wide path. Wait, narrow path, broad path. So we get to choose, though. We get to choose every day. We get to choose how to do things that will make it easier for us to pursue the narrow path. We get to choose the environments that we are in to make it easier for us to keep our executive functions in place. We get to choose. And that's part of the glory of this life. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.